Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
A good Sunday to you. This is the weekend edition of the LA Report. I'm Julia Paskin, and coming up later on the show, the monkeypox outbreak appears to be slowing. We'll talk about why health officials are now focusing their vaccination efforts on high-risk populations. Then we'll tell you about a group led by a USC professor that's taken on the challenge of creating a list of every person of Japanese descent imprisoned on the West Coast during World War II. It's all coming up, but first, here's a look at what's happening around LA. A book of the names of all the people of Japanese descent who were incarcerated during World War II was installed at the Japanese American National Museum. KPCC's Josie Huang was there.
Two dozen camp survivors, joined by descendants and clergy, took turns resting their hands on the book in remembrance of all those who'd been incarcerated. The list is the product of a years-long memorial project started out of USC. 88-year-old Kenji Sahara was a boy when his family was forced from LA and moved to three incarceration sites, the last being the Roer Camp in Arkansas.
We want to have people remember what happened in history so that when they see this name, they'll say, you know, we can't let this happen again.
Now Sahara is part of a group planning to use the list for a monument of names it wants to build in Torrance. Meanwhile, the book of names will be on view at the Japanese American National Museum for the next year. I'm Josie Huang.
Governor Gavin Newsom has signed a law meant to help street vendors. KPCC's Leslie Bearstein Rojas has more.
California legalized street vending 4 years ago, but street vendor advocates say the state rules for mobile food sales were written with food trucks in mind. Up until now, to get a health permit, food vendors were required to have bulky equipment, things like three-compartment sinks and other gear that doesn't fit on a small cart. The new law modifies the California Retail Food Code to make it easier for street food vendors to pass muster for a health permit with smaller, more affordable equipment. The new rules are set to take effect January 1st. I'm Leslie Bearstein Rojas.
Some workers at the Griffith Observatory could be the latest to join a wave of union efforts across the country. The observatory's planetarium storytellers want to join Actors Equity and have asked the city to consider their union petition. Suzanne Ford, one of those storytellers, says she and her colleagues have a good relationship with management at the city-run site, but want to be able to advocate for themselves.
We just like to do it in a professional and, you know, business-like way, the way it's done with most of the employees of the city who are represented by unions.
Ford says a union would come in handy for raising issues like raises, and that Actors Equity understands the conditions that performers work under. We have reached out to the city for comment. It's the third and final day of the late Betty White's estate auction. Martin Nolan is executive director at Julian's Auctions in Beverly Hills. He says White's collection features many Golden Girls items, including the first draft of the beloved show's pilot script.
Certainly, Betty White has so many friends all over the world, especially here in the USA, and they're showing that love and showing up for the auction and just wanting to own something, some little memento.
Bigger mementos include White's director's chair from the show and a lavender dress she wore in promotional photos. The auction starts at 10 this morning, in person and online. The Julian's Auction website has more information. A new book is out called Viva Hollywood, The Legacy of Latin and Hispanic Artists in American Film. Well, here to talk about it is author Luis Reyes. Luis, welcome.
Thank you, Julia. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So I wanted to start with your own relationship to the movies as a kid and how that connects to the intention behind the book.
I just love going to the movies. What I realized was that there weren't enough Latino faces or brown faces. And I unconsciously identified with people like Anthony Quinn, Ricardo Montalban. Fast forward 30 some odd years, and I joined the Latino actors group founded by Ricardo Montalban, Nosotros. And I got to meet quite a few of the people that I admired and loved on the screen. I noticed that there was no documentation, there were no books on American Latino participation in Hollywood. No one had documented this. There's plenty of books on Latin American cinema, but there were no books or information on the Latino stars that worked in Hollywood. So I was able to hear stories from all of these people that worked in the movies, and I was starting to document their history, gathering photographs that they had. That's how the book started.
Your book also focuses on the accomplishments of these artists, people who thrived in Hollywood throughout the years. Can you talk about some of the early pioneers that you cover?
First of all, let me clear up some popular misconceptions. We have been involved in Hollywood since inception. So we've been here since the beginning. People like Myrtle Gonzalez, who was a Mexican-American actress who worked in the silent films, and she played our heroine, an action star, really. You also have Gilbert Roland, who was a leading man up until the late 80s. He worked from the silent days. His career was able to transition. People like Dolores Del Rio, and her career transitioned to Mexico because she found the roles, after a while, she found the roles not fulfilling in Hollywood, and she went to Mexico and had a new career as in very, very famous Mexican films that helped to establish the Mexican film industry.
There's a theme also that pops up in the book about the way stories have been told. You give some examples of World War II era films. You talk about a movie called Juarez, made by mostly white people. Do you see that happening also in contemporary films? And is that evolving in any way?
There are still films that are done by non-Latinos about Latino subject matter. And sometimes, as with the recent furor over, I think it was James Franco playing Fidel Castro, where roles for Latinos are sometimes somewhat limited because we don't get, until recently, we don't get to play mainstream roles.
Your book also covers a more recent generation of pioneers, of performers and other storytellers that you profile who have made huge impacts on representation on screen. So can you give us a little bit about what readers would get to learn in that section of your book?
Now, Latino performers, artists are starting to define their own image and their own stories as part of the American experience. Luis Valdez created Zoot Suit, a story about Mexican-Americans in Los Angeles and the Zoot Suit riots. Selena, which was a fantastic film and helped to launch Jennifer Lopez. With that movie, she became the first Latina actress to earn $1 million salary. That had never happened before, and that launched her stardom. Andy Garcia just did a version of Father of the Bride that centered around a Cuban-American and a Mexican-American family. I think the most advancement that we've had is Ana de Armas playing the most iconic Hollywood star ever, which is Marilyn Monroe in this new Netflix movie called Blonde.
That's Luis Reyes, author of Viva Hollywood, The Legacy of Latin and Hispanic Artists in American Film. You can also catch him for a talk at Roman's Bookstore in Pasadena Tuesday at 7. Luis, thanks so much for being with us.
No, thank you. Muchísimas gracias, Julia.
It is hot today, going up to the high 80s along the coast, mid-90s in the mountains, hitting 100 in the valleys and deserts. Hottest days this week will be Monday through Wednesday, with highs up to 105 degrees. We'll be back right after this short break.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
The U.S. monkeypox outbreak appears to be slowing. New infections are declining in Los Angeles County, where the virus hit hard and spread quickly. Health officials are relying on a strategy of vaccinating high-risk populations. At a pop-up vaccine site in downtown L.A., our health reporter Jackie Fortier spoke with people in line waiting to get their shot.
On a sweltering Sunday afternoon, I headed towards the thumping music in downtown to DTLA Proud, an LGBTQ festival. A steady stream of people were lined up in highlighter-colored clothes to get the monkeypox vaccine. Annie Lauren was there for her first dose.
Here's the thing, I've been looking for a site because for me, like, I work a 9-to-5 job, and it seems like all of the pop-up like vaccination sites close by the time I get out of work. So a lot of my friends were hitting me up being like, hey, you know, like, this one's open on the weekend if you want to hop on that. So that's how I'm here.
The U.S. monkeypox outbreak began in May and has grown to more than 22,000 cases. L.A. County has been a hotspot. Most cases are among men who have sex with men, but more women are testing positive. Lauren says she doesn't know anyone who's had monkeypox, but she's being more careful.
Being bisexual means, like, I'll also sleep with men who are also bisexual. So it, like, also, you know, have to kind of ask, how are you feeling about the monkeypox stuff? And, you know, making sure it's part of the conversation.
Jim Manja is the CEO of St. John's Family Clinic, who is running the pop-up vaccination site.
So yesterday we vaccinated close to 600 people, and today we're expecting a similar amount. It's pretty steady all day. We're really happy to be here.
The vials of vaccine are paid for and distributed by the federal government, but clinics like St. John's have struggled to get reimbursed for the rest of the costs. The clinics hope that $1.5 million recently added to the state budget will be dispersed quickly.
Just for today, we have 9 registration employees, 14 medical assistants, 2 RNs, we have security, coordinators. All of that staff is expensive.
The CDC says high-risk populations should get the vaccine, even if you're famous. And because this is L.A., someone who stars in a Netflix show is also in line.
Hey, I'm Kit Williamson.
Williamson and his husband were in line for their second and final doses. They waited 6 weeks between shots rather than the usual 4 because supplies were limited. They wanted to give other people the chance to get their first dose.
We just need to step up manufacturing of this because God forbid that it spreads into the wider population. We could be stuck with this for the rest of our lives, and I would rather not. I think everybody here feels the same way. Obviously, we're all, you know, taking an hour out of a day of celebration and a party to come do something responsible.
Joe Trainer was dancing in line with a friend. He'd already gotten one dose and was there for moral support.
So why did you choose to get vaccinated?
Because I don't got time to be quarantining.
Images on social media of people with painful rashes caused by monkeypox had been enough to encourage him to get the vaccine.
Through like TikTok and stuff like that, and just, you know, kind of puts it in front of your face, like, wow, like there's something we could do to prevent this. I'm all about it. I'll be the first one.
Further down the line, Tody Benitez waited for his second dose.
Why not? Right now, it's like, it doesn't cost you anything and you'll be safe. So it's a good thing to do. And I didn't have any reaction to the first one, so I don't have a problem with it.
After he received his second dose, I caught up with Kit Williamson in the recovery tent.
Yeah, it's not painful, and it's great that they're able to be here and do this.
Last Monday, the CDC confirmed the first U.S. death caused by monkeypox during this outbreak. The L.A. County resident had been hospitalized with the virus. Health officials hope through events like this, more people will choose to get the shots. Covering health, I'm Jackie Fortier.
During World War II, the U.S. government incarcerated more than 120,000 people of Japanese ancestry. They were treated largely by the government as a faceless enemy. Now a group led by a USC professor has taken on the challenge of creating a list of every single person forced into camps and jails. With more, here's our Asian Communities correspondent, Josie Huang.
The number of people who lived through incarceration is fast dwindling.
My parents are gone. My sisters are gone.
Kyoko Oda is 77, a retired teacher. She was the baby of the family, born in Tule Lake, an incarceration camp in Northern California.
One day I'll be gone too.
Feeling urgency, Oda joined a group pushing to build a memorial with the names of every person incarcerated.
It's remembering the past and fighting for human rights in the future because this was a great wrong.
But the group had a problem. No master list of names existed. After Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, Japanese Americans and nationals alike were scattered across many different incarceration sites, 75 to be exact, from Hawaii to Arkansas. When records were recovered, they were riddled with errors.
Thousands of people's names were misspelled. It's clearly people never dealt with Japanese names before, and as they're typing, couldn't quite figure out what to type.
Duncan Dukin Williams directs USC's Ito Center for Japanese Religions and Culture. 3 years ago, he decided there needed to be a complete list of people who were incarcerated.
Merging everybody into this kind of enemy group is something we're trying to repair, but also what we want is people acknowledging this history as a way of giving people back their individuality.
The painstaking work required checking camp rosters against birth certificates, death certificates, census records. But Williams built a team that was enthusiastic and motivated.
I knew I'd be good at it because I have OCD, and so I was like, I'm gonna rock this.
For Shoichi Shingu, the work couldn't be more different from his job in digital marketing. He volunteered for the project after discovering that an exhibit in San Francisco on Japanese American incarceration had left out his father, who was born at the Gila River camp.
I wanted to honor his name, get him in there, and make sure that he's part of this. You know, he's born there, and he's kind of been forgotten, and kind of breaks my heart.
Shingo was asked to check the names of thousands incarcerated at another camp, Poston in Arizona. It took hundreds of hours over 8 months.
It was amazing. I mean, I can't even tell you, like, I get chills right now because just seeing the names made it real.
The team was checking the names and rechecking them up until a few weeks ago. Williams of USC says they are finally done and the tally of names is...
It's about 125,284. We believe we are 99.5%, 99.9% right.
Williams says they're trying to get to 100%. The list will be available online and family of survivors can point out any corrections or omissions. The names have also been printed in a 1,000-page book. Embedded in the cover is ceramic made from soil collected at each of the 75 incarceration sites. Williams sought help from survivors' relatives like Regina Boone.
He was like, "Would you be interested in going to pick up some soil?" Literally, I was like, yeah, why not?
Boone is a photojournalist in Virginia. That's where her Japanese grandfather had settled and built a family with her Black grandmother. The day Pearl Harbor was bombed, he was arrested by police, then detained at Fort Howard in Maryland. Boone went there to retrieve the soil.
I wasn't expecting it to be emotional, but it was.
Her grandfather, Tsuruchu Miyazaki, would be moved two more times before dying of tuberculosis the year after the war. Boone sees the Book of Names as a way to highlight the lesser-known story of a Japanese immigrant in the South and that of his Black family.
This is Japanese history. This is Black history. I mean, it's all of our history.
Boone will be in L.A. Saturday for a ceremony to install the Book of Names at the Japanese American National Museum, where it will be displayed for a year. Kyoko Oda will also be there.
You know, this is very meaningful to me that I'm living long enough to see something of this beauty and this impact.
The book is a monument to every person named on its pages. Oda hopes to next see a memorial in the more traditional sense, one with names engraved on walls of granite for future generations to read and remember. I'm Josie Huang.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Sunday edition of the LA Report. Suzanne Whatley and Nick Roman will be back tomorrow with the weekday morning and afternoon editions. Until then, try to take it easy, friends. I'm Julia Paskin. The LA Report is produced by Michael Cosentino. The Weekend LA Report is engineered by Sean Corey Campbell. On weekdays, the LA Report is engineered by Brandon Bowles and Tui Mao. Special thanks to the reporters, editors, and the entire KPCC LAist newsroom.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.